God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. Can we, all of us, even in the control room, even Randy, all of us, just pause? When we're in the media business, like me and Randy are, and the rest of my colleagues at AFR, when we are blessed with the opportunity to speak into events like this, when we're Christians, we are given a deep responsibility. Here's the pause. We are not talking about news events. We are talking about families who are experiencing the first day without a father, a mother, a child. Their lives have been torn and changed forever. We, and I speak to me, myself, because I've been busily recording podcasts this morning, I want to pause and have us remember that when the murderer, the terrorist, was driving down Bourbon Street murdering people, Jesus was weeping. And when families learned that the loved ones had been snatched from them through this act of, I think, satanic evil, Jesus was there. I don't know how many people felt that. I think sometimes it's a fanciful thing to believe that we can all, in a moment such as that, make ourselves available to the Holy Spirit. But on the off chance, on the microscopically small chance that there are people who are related or knew some of these murdered people, on the small chance that you're listening, your friends, your sons and daughters, your husbands and wives, were not and are not news stories. They walked and talked, and then they contributed to your lives in ways we can't know. And unless you've lost someone this way, you can't know what it would be like to have the world tell you, sorry, you never get to see them again on this earth. If on the small chance there are people personally impacted by this, and your friends and family knew the Lord Jesus, they don't hurt. Not anymore. And they never will again. Even as you do. When Jesus went to the cross, he knew he was going to hurt. I think God the Father was going to hurt. I think he displayed that. The sun going dark, the earth shaking, the curtain in the temple being torn apart. I think God hurt. We know Jesus was hurting. It didn't mean that God the Father stopped it when Jesus begged for another way. God the Father didn't say, you're right, this is going to hurt too much, I'll stop. The law had to be fulfilled. Jesus, in perfect submission, agreed to that. So to the people hurting, as hard as it is, as cold as it is maybe to hear. We have to hurt to grow. Does it make it fun? I still hurt over a decision I made a few months ago. I don't know that I'll ever stop hurting, which means I'll never stop growing. Sanctification is hard. On the off chance that people are listening whose family members were impacted and deeply, grievously injured in that attack, or psychologically injured, many people were. All this applies to you. We don't know your loved ones. And we don't know what it's like. And if we say we do, we're lying. But we do have the same God. A God who loves you and who wept as it happened. We're not talking about news events. We're talking about people who are reflecting upon a news event, keeping in mind we're referencing real human beings. Senator Kennedy made a statement about the attack in New Orleans.
The federal government is now in charge of this investigation. By that, I mean the White House, the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Department of Justice. I have not talked to the FBI. Maybe they've talked to my staff. I don't know. I did talk to the Secretary of Homeland Security a little while ago. And I told him that with all the respect I could muster, that we expect to put the full force and resources of the federal government behind this investigation. Our state troopers, our local police departments, our sheriffs, we've got many sheriffs here today, have been terrific so far. Federal government is cooperating with them. I hope that will continue. Here's what I want to ask from the federal government. Catch these people. Catch these people. And then tell the American people the truth. Now, I don't want you to tell us yet anything that's going to interfere with your investigation. And there are things that I've been told that I think are true that I'm not sharing with you today because it could interfere with their investigation. But after we get to the bottom of this, they need to tell the American people the truth. And the people in New Orleans the truth. And the people of America the truth. I think the mayor and the governor are very wise to postpone this ball game for 24 hours. There's just too much stuff we don't know. And it's just not worth it. But I guess my final point is, I will promise you this. I will, when it is appropriate and this investigation is complete, you will find out what happened and who was responsible. Or I will raise fresh hell. And I will chase those in the federal government who are responsible for telling us what happened. Like they stole Christmas.
Senator Kennedy suggesting, I think, subtextually, that the Department of Homeland Security may not choose to tell the truth. The truth to hurting people. Not a news event. It's an earth-shattering, life-changing event of pain about which people were hurt for the rest of their lives. A little bit less every day, but they'll still hurt. The FBI needs to adjust to something. We have very little reason to trust you at the top. You're liars. You lie to us all the time at the top. You have a reflex to lie to us. We'll play the audio clip perhaps in a bit. You saw the young woman who is some kind of assistant special deputy of the FBI who was breaking a rule. She's not to have nose rings. She was wearing one. That's a small detail. Why would I even mention it? Because it goes to the degradation of the FBI. The rule is you don't wear nose rings. There she is with a nose ring, standing up to the camera saying this was not a terrorist attack. It was. Everybody knew it. There was the ISIS flag. This is really important for us to look at from both sides. So the attacker apparently had an ISIS flag in the back of his truck. And someone's instinct on that crime scene, law enforcement, probably perhaps the FBI, was to immediately cover up the ISIS flag. You can say that's tampering with evidence. In a way, it is. I was thinking at this through the viewpoint of law enforcement. You know what occurred to me? This could have been a patriot. Because our law enforcement world is filled with great patriots, even as the FBI is a fallen, corrupt agency that should be scrapped, done away with, its budget taken to zero, renamed and rebuilt with a new mission they actually have to keep. There's still great people who work there. This could have been a patriot looking at that ISIS flag said, no way. I'm not going to give you this photo op. I'm not going to let you take pictures of these murders and use them to raise funds. Not going to happen. That's not going to stand above the bodies of dead Americans. Not on my watch. It's very possible. If so, say so. Because the pictures made it out long before the FBI ever came around to admitting the flag was there. It created a continual and continuing compounding lack of belief in the FBI, just as does this. The New York Post made it to the home of the murderer, the terrorist, hours ahead of the FBI. We know this because of social media, because the reporters of the New York Post said we were here hours before the FBI got here. That's extraordinary, except it's not. I will never forget watching on MSNBC after the San Bernardino terrorist attacks where they went and shot those people up at a work party after they were allowed to do that. I'll never forget watching an MSNBC reporter reach into the freezer of the home in which the killers staged their attack, pull out a popsicle and eat it. Standing there, bespoiling evidence. The families for whom this is not a news story, it is their story, deserve better. Then there's the coincidences, and they are thick. A witness told CNN the hydraulic metal barriers were down during the attack in Nolens.
Did you see, when you were looking down from the balcony, did you see the truck? Did you see the suspect?
Oh, he had been gone. That's what I was telling the other news sources. Like, we have these hydraulic steel barriers from past events. Last Mardi Gras, this happened to an extent, maybe not terrorism, but still people getting hit in mass population with vehicles. Those barricades were not on, period. They had the flimsy orange ones that you could just push over with your finger. We actually thought it was kind of odd, because usually when you get to Bourbon Street, you can turn your back to Canal and not worry about anything. You can just walk the street, especially on New Year's, and there were still vehicles coming after 8 p.m. And then, I mean, the fact that they never raised them. That's how this guy was able to get down Bourbon Street so quickly.
The coincidences are thick. Did the murderer know the barriers were going to be down? If you watch the video of the murders, he simply drives up to an intersection. There's a police officer with his car parked there. He drives into a parking lot of what looks like a gas station or convenience store and then goes around the cop. Did he know? The Fort Bragg connection is, I think, remarkable. I was talking to a friend of mine who's a retired special forces operative. His name is Michael Rourke. Mike's coming into my studio short notice tomorrow to help me unpack all this. He points out Fort Bragg has 60,000 people at it. Right, it does. It also had two of these terrorists. New Orleans and Las Vegas tied to Fort Bragg, just as was the guy who tried to murder President Trump at Mar-a-Lago tied to Fort Bragg. Coincidence, perhaps. Interesting. We'll continue to talk about this, plus more on the front of the heretics taking over American churches. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. A few more just observations about Las Vegas and New Orleans. My friend Mike O'Rourke, I mentioned earlier, is retired Special Forces, and he and I are talking right now back and forth on, going between Telegram and Signal and text, depending on his level of comfort. One of the things he points out that is very weird about the Las Vegas event, this was the Cybertruck, the Tesla that was blown up outside of Trump Towers. It didn't burst into flames. It was blown up. It was a remote control, a remote device that the alleged murderer used to blow this up. A whole bunch is not adding up, including some questions about whether this was really a Special Forces, retired Special Forces, in fact, active duty Special Forces officer, soldier. I'm not going to say his name right now because there's a whole debate about whether this is really the guy. And let me tell you why I find this very curious. My friend Mike O'Rourke, who is the furthest thing from ever endorsing anything that he can't put three or four sources on, he is so careful. He simply has this question. How would a Special Forces trained soldier go and intend to have a massive explosion and pick the wrong vehicle? The Cybertruck has very thick walls, hence the explosion going straight up and not out. And why would he not use pressurized gas? Why would you not use a propane tank? Pressurized. Why would you simply use liquid gas? It doesn't provide the same firepower. You're taught how to make IEDs, both as a Special Forces operative and by watching what our enemies do, who make them out of necessity. That's a very strange thing. Happening on the same day, to me, indicates a connection. The FBI says no, but then again, the FBI told us that President Trump was a Russian plant, that he worked for Vladimir Putin. They told us that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. It didn't exist. They told us Joe Biden, they had no proof that Joe Biden worked with Hunter's business associates. Now, we have pictures the FBI has provided of Biden introducing his kid to Xi, the dictator of China. They admitted they had the laptop and knew what it was for several years. And we all know that President Trump, in fact, was not a Russian plant. So I'm very sorry when I hear the leadership of the FBI say these two events are not connected. I say, I don't believe you. Both instances used the same car rental company, which is effectively an Airbnb for cars. Interesting, with all those other choices, they chose the same one on the same day. Why New Orleans? Well, maybe there's this. The police chief of New Orleans is a woman named Ann Kirkpatrick. She's been around. She's been to a number of cities, including, I'm just up the street from Spokane, Washington. She was there. Most infamously, she was in Oakland, California, a city and now region that is unrecognizable to anyone who ever grew up there. It is a fallen, destroyed place in many areas, and I'm talking about dilapidation like you would expect in the biggest squalor of South Africa in the days of apartheid. People living not just in shacks, but below shacks, fallen shacks on the sides of the freeway, and acres and acres, hundreds of them, of places like that, places you don't go. It's well known in Oakland. You can walk into any store and help yourself to anything you want as long as it's under $1,000 and no one's going to stop you. The gangs know this. The cartels know this. They know that in the homeless encampments, you can sex traffic children and others. You can drug traffic and no one's going to stop you. She was the police chief there. She got fired and then got a settlement and got hired in New Orleans. And the statement about her hiring pointed out that she's an expert. She's tenured, meaning she has survived attrition. She's nearly, 82? There's a lot of 82-year-olds who are mentally sharper than I am. I don't think she's one of them. They bragged about her expertise. Her expertise in bias, empathy, and DEI. Empathy is a good thing. It's not key to leading a police force. It's important, but it's not key. Tactical ability, strategic ability, and a commitment to enforcing the law and protecting citizens, a swearing of an oath to a constitution, is far more important than empathy for someone leading a police force. She does not have those skills. Now, the Mockingbird Media is not going to spend time talking about this. If I'm thinking about cities to select to go undertake a terrorist attack, I'd take a lot of things into account. For instance, could I drive through town with an ISIS flag and have no one raise an alarm? Only in leftist cities can you do that, and they do it. Think I'm kidding? It is not uncommon in cities like Seattle for there to be full-fledged ISIS and Hamas rallies, where they still to this day stop traffic on the freeway for hours at a time. Now, the police have gotten better at this because the Democrats are starting to understand that this is deeply unpopular. They even sometimes stop them, but not immediately. They're allowed to block the lives of people, people going to job interviews, to the hospital, as they're forced to sit there and wait as they look at Hamas and ISIS flags. And I am here to tell you, I am here to predict and to tell you it's almost a certainty. One day in American cities, in three or four cities, they're going to stop traffic, just like they always have. They're going to get out of their cars, and they're going to begin murdering people. And when the first responders show up, they're not going to be able to drive up. They're going to have to run up or ride motorcycles up. They'll get shot. When they finally make it to the scene, that's when they blow up the car-based IEDs. And you have a mass casualty event like we've never seen. And if they place that in a tunnel, like the Lincoln Tunnel or the decrepit Boston Tunnel or the hastily built, terrible waterfront tunnel in Seattle, and they blow cars up in there, it's even worse. Why would I say such a thing? Why would I give them that idea? You think that they don't have these ideas? We have to be unbelievably lacking in imagination or creativity to not think they've already designed these attacks. So why wouldn't they do them? Because the border's still open. Why would they have attacks like this in whole while the border's open? President Trump is prepared to shut the border. He's prepared for mass deportations. The terrorists know this. And somewhere on their equilibrium, their planning matrix, there comes this change. The United States actually enforces its border. Okay, if they're serious about this and there's 4 years where we can't sneak in more operatives, now the attacks can start. Don't let the United States concentrate on securing the borders. Make them come into the center of the country. Make them secure their cities. Our enemies know that we're conflicted, that there'll be great debate about this. See, the media is going to help them with this. They don't know they're helping the enemy, but they are. They're helping the enemy by not focusing on people like the police chief of New Orleans, who has no business being a police chief. The media can't help themselves. Look at this. This CBS News, for instance, is not the topic of New Orleans and the Las Vegas bombing. But CBS News journalist slams the media and says that the most underreported 2024 story was Biden's obvious cognitive decline.
One of the things we also do in the year-end correspondence roundtable is dig into what was undercovered or underreported. Jan?
Undercovered, underreported. That would be, to me, Joe Biden's obvious cognitive decline that became undeniable in the televised debate.
At the presidential debate with Donald Trump.
Unquestioned. And, you know, it's starting to emerge now that his advisors kind of managed his limitations. It's been reported in the Wall Street Journal for 4 years, and yet he insisted that he could still run for president. We should have much more forcefully questioned whether he was fit for office for another 4 years, which could have led to a primary for the Democrats. It could have changed the scope of the entire election. Yet, still, incredibly, we read in the Washington Post that his advisors are saying that he regrets that he dropped out of the race. You know, that he thinks he could have beaten Trump. And I think that is either delusional or they're gaslighting.
President Biden has.
So that's Jan Crawford with CBS News. She's been there for decades or more. I sent her a note and said, hey, Jan, thank you for saying that. But incidentally, why is it that since that man was installed in the White House, I am on record, both in my local program in Seattle, my former morning show there. I'm on record in my podcast. I'm on record on American Family Radio, another radio program I have. I'm on record everywhere. I originally had called him Joe Biden's dementia. That was my name for him. Until someone who's 74 years old and a lot mentally crisper than me came to me and said, that's really hurtful. Because it seems like you're saying old people are out of touch. And I said, you know what? You're right. Well, and my program director said something about it. You're right. You're right. That's an insult to older people. So I changed it to the figurehead. I've been calling him the figurehead since he was installed. How is it that I was able to point out that he doesn't make any decisions? If you've listened to this program at all, how many times have you heard me say the people who run Joe Biden caused him to do the following? It was obvious. How is it not obvious to the people in the Beltway? Two reasons. Number one, the former senior editor of the New York Times, Jill Abramson, said in a, this is part of a much longer piece she wrote, I worry that too many journalists didn't try to get the story because they did not want to be accused of helping to elect Donald Trump. I get that. She was a senior editor of the New York Times from 2011 to 2014. They didn't want to tell the truth because they didn't want to not rig an election. Think about this. In order to rig an election, they refused to tell the truth, the obvious truth. There's another incident that points to this. Matt Iglesias, one of the people who helped start Vox.com, a deeply, deeply dishonest man. He once did an Ask Me Anything online, a video series, and he was supposing to answer questions about Iraq and Afghanistan. And he started to provide an example of his knowledge of Iraq and Afghanistan, and it turned out he was directly quoting Wikipedia. He didn't want you to know that, but he didn't notice that the screen of his PC was visible in a reflection behind him that we could all look and go, Matt, you are reading directly from Wikipedia, pretending these are your words. Infamous event. Matt Iglesias came out and said he just didn't get it. He said, I thought Joe Biden was going to prove his doubters wrong at the big debate. I know that ever since that humiliation, the world thinks the entire media was in on a massive cover-up, but the fact is many of us, and seemingly many members of his team, genuinely thought the situation was better than it was. In a lot of ways, it's been more embarrassing to have been gullible and wrong when so many people with no sources and no inside info could see it clearly, but that's what happened. I was just wrong about one of the big questions of the year. Why is it that people with no inside sources and no information knew it, or inside information? Because we don't have inside sources. We don't live in your bubble. We don't care if we get invited to dinners in Washington, D.C. We don't care if we're popular with your friends. We don't care if we say things that embarrass the party. Some of us try to be truthful. It's been evident from the day he was installed, Joe Biden runs nothing. America dodged a bullet. That's the cliched way to say it. Here's another way. I think God gave us one more chance. When we did not elect Kamala Harris to serve as the next figurehead, I think God gave us one more chance. Now, this has been incredibly divisive in this country. I may have lost a relationship with my sister over this. It's very possible she'll never speak to me again for having voted for President Trump. Please don't judge her. Please love her. I do. I always will. But we did, I think, get one more chance. The president of the Teamsters said Kamala Harris's ego was even bigger than his pretty thuggish ego.
She finally agrees to come after we were putting pressure on her, you know, basically, because I was doing interviews all over the place saying, we haven't got invited to the DNC. You know, they haven't accepted our invitation for her to come to a roundtable. So she comes to the roundtable. Same format, same questions. Rank and file members are asking her questions just like they asked every other candidate. And they were trying to negotiate with us She only wants to answer three questions. We're like, there's 16 questions here. So she answers three of them. And on the fourth question, one of her operatives or one of her staff slips a note in front of me. This will be the last question. And it was 20 minutes earlier than the time that it was going to end.
Come on.
100%. And so, you know, you're there trying to get our support. And her declaration on the way out was, I'm going to win with you or without you.
She thought that or said it out loud?
She said it out loud.
That's insane.
Well, it's also this. Arrogance and ignorance combined are the worst possible form of leadership. Arrogance and ignorance combined. Let's think back to what we've been talking about today. Oh, the barriers on Bourbon Street on one of the biggest events in the year. Let's take them down. Arrogance and ignorance. And God warned us about human kings, didn't he? Welcome back with the Tower Babbling and a personal note. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View. So much we didn't get to today. I got very, very busy in talking about the terrorist attacks, and that's the way it should be. And we'll wrap this program up today with a personal note that I may have shared with you before. And if so, I apologize. But, oh, man. When I allow myself to stop and remember that in these terrorist attacks, we're not, to us, it's news. To the family members that went through it, it's not news. It's not a news event. It's their lives. Sometimes we can be so self-centered that we're almost making these terrorist attacks, these lives lost, a news event in our life. We need to flip that. Remember that the news is going on around these families. So I'll tell you a story about a friend of mine who's a law enforcement officer and something he used to do every morning before he went to work. Let's share that in a personal note in a second here. In the last day of 2024, and last weekend, a group of the last weekend of the year, 2024, a group of so-called COVID-cautious folks in Oregon rented out a bowling alley, had everyone wear woke masks, including the employees, and they set up their own air purifiers. They separated kids from adults, none of which does anything to even slightly hinder viral transmission.
Hey, I'm Amanda, and come with me as 80 of my COVID-cautious friends go bowling in Portland, Oregon. We were super thrilled to have Kingpins open before hours for us and agree to mask. We had about 80 people, including kids of all ages and adults, come out and join us this morning from 9 to 10:30. Check out those Aeronet numbers. That's because we had purifiers up. We also had this adult-only section that was really great.
Oh, and the adults-only section, by the way, I used to weigh almost 400 pounds. My dad was obese his whole life. I am not body-shaming. I am describing. The adults-only section was almost purely peopled by people who were severely obese. Far more likely to have adverse health events from that. Far more likely to be killed by that than by the COVID flu. And separating kids from adults? See, I mentioned this because the new PSYOP is the bird flu. Same actors, same approach. And according to Dr. Peter McCullough and some other people, this version of the bird flu came out of gain-of-function research done by the CDC in and around Maryland. A CDC study shows, by the way, this is a very mild strain, and it also shows that 100% of the time this is transferred to humans, which has almost happened very rarely, but 100% of the time it has happened connected to the mass killing of poultry. And incidentally, that mass killing of poultry is unnecessary because it's a very mild version of this. The mass killing comes at the time, same time, that, remember this, in the Netherlands, Dutch ranchers were told, you have to kill your herds. Your herds of cattle have to die and you can never raise them again. And if you don't do this, we will ban your family from ever ranching again. Why did they do that? In my judgment, because they're trying to limit our access to meat. Because Bill Gates and others have purchased the ability to shut us off from meat choices, so we are left with their fake proteins, which they pretend help the earth. You could say that's a long reach, but you watch. They're going to continue to cull herds of birds, despite the fact that that's 100% of the time, according to the CDC, how this stuff is getting into people. Oh, one more thing on the COVID front. Alex Berenson, very great reporter, great writer, great investigator. He's super cautious. He's about 2 years behind on this, but he's finally ready to talk about it. He's now admitting in what he calls a stunning finding that some people injected with the mRNA injections appear to make spike proteins for years. Of course they do. This was a grand experiment. And some people who got the certain batch of the modified RNA injections got a batch with DNA sequences in it that caused their body to produce the spike protein for years and have the inherent problems that come with that. He says it's because some of the material from the vaccine is integrated with human DNA, the so-called vaccines. Of course, that's one of the approaches. Do not fall for the new PSYOP. Don't give an inch on the bird flu PSYOP. As difficult as it is in this program sometimes, or frustrating, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly the wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
And I hope that... Prime Minister Xi, she has some difficulties right now.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites in the Tower of Babbling starting here. Representative Wesley Hunt confirms that illegal immigrants can use active arrest warrants as ID to board airplanes.
This is a line in the Tucson airport. As you can see, the sign says, non-U.S. citizens without passports enter here. You know what a valid form of ID is for an illegal alien, according to TSA today? An arrest warrant. I'm not making that up. And if an arrest warrant can get an illegal alien on a domestic flight, then why can't it get them a one-way ticket to jail where they belong?
That's a great way to put it. Why can't it? Because we don't want him in jail. The impeached traitor, Alejandro Mayorkas, is impeached. He is a traitor. He wants him in this country. Why? Don't know. I know the effects it's having. It's destabilizing the country. It's destroying our electoral college system. It's destroying trust in any of our institutions, and it's costing people their lives. He can choose which motive. Oh, by the way, to Director Mayorkas, everything whispered in the dark will one day be shouted from the rooftops. God knows your motive. You can still repent. And I pray that you do. Next soundbite in today's Tower Babbling, 60 Minutes reports on how Mexico has proven that strict gun control works. Wait. I mean, it doesn't work at all.
There's only one gun store in Mexico, in the middle of a heavily guarded military base in Mexico City. We were allowed in. But before customers can enter, they have to show proof they've passed psychological tests, drug screens, and extensive background checks, mostly shotguns, small caliber rifles, and handguns. What civilians can't buy here are the weapons the cartel favors. Those are not legally sold anywhere in Mexico.
Did they not see what the... Can they not hear themselves? What citizens can't have is equal access to guns to defend against attacks by cartels. Unbelievable. They can't hear themselves. Last up in today's Tower of Babbling. In Pennsylvania, a racist government program will provide small business loans only to white people. Wait, hold it. No, I'm sorry. I meant only to black people, so it's not racist at all.
I'm really excited for not just our membership, but the region and the Commonwealth as a whole. I think that these resources and the new programming and the grant funding is going to really help organizations such as the nonprofits that are doing the work in the trenches, helping these small businesses really thrive. But I'm really excited also the fact that there's going to be some dedicated resources to helping would-be entrepreneurs figure it out.
By the way, just everybody at the press conference was black. This is all for black businesses. And I had thought at one time we decided to be post-racial. Guess not. Oh, in the body of Christ, there's neither Greek nor Jew, nor servant nor master. So maybe Jesus would like us to be post-racial here. You know, his kingdom come, his will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time, and I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
On a personal note today, a friend of mine was a law enforcement officer. I have a lot of friends who are cops. I don't know how that happened. It just did. Maybe it's because of the circles in which I run and the sort of workouts I like to do. Maybe it's because of CrossFit. Maybe it's because of my family had a bunch of cops in it. Don't know why I was blessed with that. I was. Some of it came through radio, meeting cops. Cops tend to listen to a lot of talk radio and tend to agree sometimes with us. So he had a tradition because his family was concerned. He would give his family a loan when he left the house. Loan his kids money. Here's your loan. I'll get it back to you when I come home. Don't forget to have my money. I believe it was $15 every day. I'll be back for my money. Don't lose my money. And this continued for about 10 years. And then he didn't come home. There are footsteps. The sounds of footsteps that many military wives dread. Very often they happen at 2 o'clock in the morning. And there's a door knock they dread. And there are people they dread to see. A chaplain and a couple of officers. And a flag. My friend's wife got the knock on the door. She knew. Mark had never been late without calling. Even if he was in a tense scene, unless he was chasing a suspect or being shot at, he would text, working. She knew that meant he was in the midst of it. He was in the blank, as Mark was fond of saying, working. She didn't get that text. When she got the knock on the door, she knew it was just a confirmation. We regret to inform you. And Elise said, please don't read it. Ma'am, we have to read the full statement. We regret to inform you that your husband, Patrol Lieutenant Mark, I won't say his last name, was killed in the line of duty. The $15. They talked about what to do with that. There was talk of burying Mark with it. Giving his money back. That was discussed. Ultimately, the family made another decision. They took the $15 and they pinned it to the exit to their house. The garage door, they used to exit through the garage door. It was for years pinned there. The last loan that Mark gave his family. And the message was this: we never know. We never know. Never know when we're coming back. The Bible warns us that there will be those who are thrashing in the field, side by side, three women. Two will be gone, one will remain. Men building houses. Three on a rooftop. One is gone and two remain. They warn us, the Bible warns us about that day. The day of judgment when the Lord comes. It's metaphorical because all of us have an ending. We just don't know when it will be. In the case of New Orleans and so many other cases, families didn't get a knock on a door. They got a news report. Oh gosh. Oh Lord. Oh Jesus. Our family is there. And they had the realization that way. So to those families on the off chance that you're listening, on the off chance that you hear this, we all face that day. Some of us will get warning. Our loved ones will be in the hospital for a long time. You didn't. But we all face that day. It is unfair that your family is suffering this. You shouldn't be going through this. And all of us face that day. You will face it too. Please make the decision to follow the Lord Jesus. Please make the decision to remember my friend Mark and the loan of $15. And make your decision now. Because if you don't know where you're going when you die, you know where you're going when you die. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Until God gives us permission to visit again together, may His peace, which transcends all understanding, wash over you and your families. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman, and this has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.